We are, as I said, on page 34. So I mentioned this last time as we introduced this chapter just briefly. The term shepherd can apply to political leaders, but can also apply to prophets and priests. So you can look that up. You can do your own research on that. I think, and one has to be really careful with this, but I think perhaps what Ezekiel is referencing is perhaps just anybody in leadership. So in a sense, covering all three, because that's what Jesus does. When he comes, he will be a political leader, he will be a prophet, he'll be a priest, right? So perhaps that's what Ezekiel is referencing. Secondly, I want you to notice that Yahweh references approximately 15 times the expression, my flock or my sheep. So you get the idea that this is important, right, to him, and don't mess with his sheep, right? There are consequences for doing that. Now, chapter 34, verses 1 through 10, Ezekiel, again, if we back up to Leviticus chapter 26, you're going to get tired of me referencing Leviticus probably here in Ezekiel, but Leviticus chapter 26 and verse 33, he says, "You, however, I will scatter among the nations and will draw out a sword after you as your land becomes desolate and your cities become waste." Now, that's going to echo, I think, in your hearing as we look in Ezekiel 34. So, first of all, Yahweh evaluates the self-oriented shepherds. And you can see his description there in down in beginning in verse 2, he pronounces a woe upon them. Woe, shepherds of Israel, who have been shepherding themselves. Isn't that kind of an odd thing for a shepherd to do? Right? It's really inward focused, isn't it? Should not the shepherds shepherd the flock? You, and here he now gives a list of what shepherding yourself instead of shepherding the flock looks like. You eat the fat and clothe yourselves with the wool. In other words, you're exploiting them economically, right? You're taking the best for yourself and using it for yourself. You sacrifice the fat sheep without shepherding the flock. So there's this self-orientation. Verse 4, those who are sickly you have not strengthened, and the disease you have not healed, and the broken you have not bound up, and the scattered you have not brought back, nor have you searched for the lost. In other words, you are neglecting them. This is a cruel neglect, right? Sheep in this condition are going to die, right? Unless the shepherd does something. Because sheep cannot heal themselves. They cannot fix that which is broken. They cannot be brought, they cannot find themselves back to where they ought to be because they are completely directionless. When they get lost, they stay lost, right? It's what they are. So unless a shepherd steps in and does something, these sheep will die. And that's what Yahweh's point is through Ezekiel, is that this is cruel neglect. He says in verse 5, they were scattered for lack of a shepherd, and they became food for every beast of the field and were scattered. Why? Because they're defenseless. Not only directionless, they're also defenseless, right? My flock wandered through all the mountains and on every high hill. My flock was scattered over all the surface of the earth, and there was no one to seek or search for them. So there's domination, there is failure to protect, there's exploitation. It really couldn't get any worse for this flock, right? You couldn't have asked a shepherd to imagine the worst possible job and please go do that. is the worst, right? This is absolutely the worst job they could do. But in despite that, right, verses 7 through 10, Yahweh will rescue the flock. He says, therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. And then he takes an oath, as I live, declares Adonai Yahweh. Surely, because my flock has become plunder, my flock has even become food for all the beasts of the field for lack of a shepherd, and my shepherds did not seek for my flock, but rather the shepherds shepherded themselves and did not shepherd my flock. Therefore, you shepherds, hear the word of Yahweh. That's a long introduction to God saying, I know everything you've done. Okay? I know everything. Thus says Adonai Yahweh, behold, I am against the shepherds, and I will seek my flock from their hand and make them cease from shepherding the flock. And so the shepherds will not shepherd themselves anymore, but I will deliver my flock from their mouth so that they will not be food for them. What a gracious and merciful rescue, right? So what you have, though, in reality is this. Yahweh rescuing Jewish people from Jewish people. You ever pondered that? He's rescuing Jewish people from Jewish people. And we say, well, that ain't right. That's true. It shouldn't have to be that way. But that's what sin does, right? Sin corrupts and sin destroys and sin infects and corrupts every aspect of a culture, even a Jewish one. Now, if we stop there, we would say, man, this is really discouraging. But thankfully, there's verses 11 through 24, right? For thus says Adonai Yahweh, behold, I myself will seek my sheep and care for them. Right? Now, the very thing that these human shepherds were not doing, God says, I will do. And as a shepherd cares for his herd in the day when he is among his sheep which are spread out, so I will care for my sheep and will deliver them from all the places to which they were scattered on a cloudy and gloomy day. And I will bring them out from the peoples and gather them from the countries and bring them to their own land. And I will shepherd them on the mountains of Israel by the streams and in all the inhabited places of the land. And I will shepherd them in a good pasture. And their grazing ground will be on the mountain heights of Israel. And there they will lie down on good grazing ground and be shepherded in rich pasture on the mountains of Israel. Does that echo Psalm 23? Right? Did you hear different phrases? Verse 15, and I will shepherd my flock and I will make them lie down. Now, that's not an easy thing to do from the shepherds I've talked to, the books that I've read on shepherding, which makes me an expert on it, but sheep will not lie down unless certain requirements are met, right? They need to be free from any kind of anxiety, whether from dangers from without or animosity with other sheep, right? So they have to be at peace. They need to be well fed. They need to have plenty of beverage to drink, right? So they need to be near a stream of water. So it sounds like us, right? Sounds like Sunday afternoon. Take a nap. But they need to be free from any kind of pests or any kind of adversaries. So when all of those things have been provided for, they'll lay down. Okay? But things need to be provided. Now God says what? I will cause them to lie down. It's another way of saying, this is not a forceful thing, right? But this is a way of saying, I'm going to give them everything they need. Even stuff they don't think they need, but I'm going to give them exactly what they need, and then they will lie down. This is not a forceful thing like trying to make your 2-year-old sit down. set on your lap when they want to stand up. This is give them what they need, not what they want, because that's the problem in verses 1 through 10, right? The shepherds are no different than the sheep in verses 1 through 10. But God is saying, I'm going to provide everything that you need. I will take care of it all. Verse 16, I will search for the lost. I will bring back the scattered, bind up the broken, strengthen the sick. But the fat and the strong I will destroy. I will shepherd them with judgment. Now that echoes later in the book of Revelation. I'm going to rule them or shepherd them with a rod of iron. Let's pause there. So I've typed in some things there for you on the top of page 35. You'll notice the 12 times that God says, I will. So he doesn't say you will or they will. He says, I will. God is actively involved in this. And in contrast to the self-oriented shepherd, he will care for them. He has promised to do at least six things. I've typed that in there for you. He's going to examine their condition, which is what a good shepherd will do. He's going to rescue them from their enemies. He will bring them out of exile, gather them from the various countries. He will bring them to their own land, and he will shepherd them on their own land. Okay? He's going to take care of it all. Now, they are in the land of others. They are in exile because of their sin. Right? So they don't deserve to be brought back. But he has promised that he will do this. And the return from exile under Ezra, Nehemiah, nor the modern return, reestablishment of Israel in 48 fulfills this promise. This is yet to be fulfilled. But it will be fulfilled. So God looks at the flock and he says, what? You are lost, verse 16. You are scattered, you are broken, you are sick. And there are some who are fat and strong that need to be destroyed, and he will shepherd them with judgment. So he's not looking at this ignoring certain things. He is looking at it accurately, right? It's as clear as could be. So he says, this is what needs to be done. Well, verses 17 through 22, now he evaluates the flock itself. And again, this is not necessarily going to be flattering for them. As for you, my flock, thus says Adonai Yahweh, behold, I will judge between one sheep and another, between the rams and the male goats. Is it too slight a thing for you that you should be shepherded in the good pasture, that you must tread down with your feet the rest of your pastures? In other words, you're destructive, right? You ruin things. And again, this is, if you think back to some of the old westerns, there was always the conflict between the cattlemen and the sheep, right? Oh, that was bad, right? Okay. Why? Because the sheep will destroy things, right? They eat further down on the plants, and it impacts the roots, and the people raising cattle say, well, no, you're going to ruin the pasture, right? And if sheep are not moved out of the pasture at the right time, they will ruin that pasture, right? So this is what he's saying. Why do you destroy what has been given to you? Or that you should drink of the clear waters, that you must follow the rest with your feet. Why do you have to make the water dirty for everybody else, right? That's why you always drink water from upstream, right? Just be careful, right? It's a thing, right? Do not be the guy on the end. Go on. Yeah. As for my flock, they must be shepherded on what you tread down with your feet and drink what you foul with your feet. In other words, you are negatively impacting everybody around you because of your sin. Now, it's a wonderfully picturesque illustration, but his point is you've been given all of this by the grace of God, and then you're abusing and victimizing others because of your self-centeredness. So don't just look at the shepherds and say, oh, they're bad. It's you as well, right? It's the flock as well. Verse 20, therefore, thus says Adonai Yahweh to them, behold, I, even I, will judge between the fat sheep and the lean sheep, because you push with side and with shoulder and thrust at all the sickly with your horns until you have scattered them abroad. Right? When I was growing up, that was called the lunch line. Right? Who's going to get first and get that whatever it was for lunch at school, right? It's what people do, right? They still do that, don't they? Try to get through a gate going to a sporting event, right? Or what do you call it? Fellowship meals. Yeah. Or Black Friday sales, right? People literally getting trampled to death, right? To get a TV, right? But despite that, he says, therefore I will save my flock and they will no longer be plunder, and I will judge between one sheep and another. So despite the sin of the abusive and the victimized sheep, the shepherd still responds in grace and mercy. You can't earn grace, you can't earn mercy. So, verse 23 through 24. Listen carefully to this. Then I will establish over them. Once they've been gathered is the idea. Then I will establish over them one shepherd. Now again, the scriptures tell us, is a Proverbs that tells us that the principle, and this is a really free paraphrase, but basically as sin increases, you need more politicians. Right? You need more princes. You need more people to rule because you have more stupid people doing sinful things. Right? So, I'm going to establish over them one shepherd. Who is that? My servant David. Now, that's either the resurrected David, or I am more inclined to think it is Jesus the Messiah, who is the ultimate son of David, and I've given you lots of references there for you. And he will shepherd them. And he will shepherd them himself and be their shepherd. One king to rule an entire nation. Just ponder that. What that says about his authority and his capability to be able to effectively and wisely shepherd an entire nation all by himself. Wow. And I, Yahweh, will be their God, and my servant David will be prince among them. Now, prince and king are sometimes interchangeable terms, and I've given you some of that there in the notes. I, Yahweh, have spoken, which is another way of saying, well, we do this, right, as parents. Dad said, right? This is Yahweh said, right? So, end of discussion. It'll get accomplished, right? But you see what tremendous hope this is? And Daniel Block points out these five things. The shepherd is not self-appointed. In other words, he doesn't volunteer for this. He is not elected by the people. In other words, he doesn't take a poll of all the sheep and say how many would like Jesus to be the shepherd, right? That's not what happens here. Yahweh puts him in this position. The shepherd is singular, secondly, not a dynasty, or if you're from Great Britain, a dynasty. But the shepherd is singular, one shepherd. Can you imagine what that would be like to eliminate every level of political power and have one person? Wow. How big would City Hall be, right? You know what I'm saying? And this is what will happen when Jesus is established as king. The shepherd is David, or the descendant of David, the ultimate descendant of David. The shepherd, fourthly, will be a servant of Yahweh. And the shepherd will be in the midst of, in other words, over and among his people. But what a tremendous promise. Now, let's, before we go any further in Ezekiel 34, let me go over to John chapter 10. And John chapter 10 is one of those refreshing, encouraging gospel passages. And again, I think it's helpful to remember that the Gospels are Old Testament books with a New Testament address, okay? Because they take place before the cross, right? So they're Old Testament. They're at the end of the Old Testament, but they're still, in a sense, Old Testament-y type books. So you need to go through the Gospels more with an Old Testament mindset and hearing the echoes of Old Testament, the Old Testament prophets, the Old Testament writings. And Jesus in John chapter 10 and verse 1 says to us, "Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber." And again, the picture of the sheep fold in the land of Israel, just a fenced-in area, the fence made of rock, and there was one doorway without a wooden door, right? It was an open doorway, and that is where the shepherd would sleep at night, in the doorway, right? So he is saying you have to come in, and there's one way. It's exclusive to get into this sheepfold. So if you come in any other way, you can't trust him, right? He's a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he brings all his own out, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow him because they know his voice. Right? They're aware. They're familiar. A stranger they will never follow, but will flee from him because they don't know the voice of strangers. Now this figure of speech Jesus spoke to them. Now, John says this very carefully because they did not understand what those things were which he had been saying to them. They didn't understand the shepherd's voice. Okay. Now, the problem is not the shepherd. Okay. The problem is not the shepherd. The problem is the sheep. Verse 7, so Jesus said to them again, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers." Now, that does not mean that David and Jeremiah and Ezekiel and Isaiah are part of the thieves and the robbers. That's not what he's saying. But he is saying, comparatively speaking, the shepherds who came before me are thieves and robbers. But the sheep did not hear them. "I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy." Sound like Ezekiel 34? "I came that they may have life and have it abundantly." Now verse 11 through 18. "I am the good shepherd. And the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." Now, I need to say this because this is a passage of scripture that I think gets turned on its head. I don't think verse 11 is telling us the extent of the atonement. In other words, Jesus is not teaching that he is simply laying down his life only for the sheep. Everybody else is excluded. I don't think that's the context. The context is, I'm a good shepherd who is willing to sacrifice his life for the sheep. It's a the contrast here is not the extent of the atonement, but the type of shepherd. Okay? That's the issue. Because I think this is based on Ezekiel 34. Which the whole thing in Ezekiel 34 is what type of shepherd? And we can argue on the extent of the atonement, I think, from other passages, but I don't think John 10 verse 11 is a passage that we need to cling to prove that he died only for the elect. Verse 12, he who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who is not the owner of the sheep, sees the wolf coming, leaves the sheep and flees, and the wolf snatches and scatters them because he's a hired hand and is not concerned about the sheep. See, that's the point. What type of shepherd? Do you have a shepherd that's willing to sacrifice himself for you? Or a shepherd who is willing to sacrifice you for himself? That's what the hired man's doing. Right? That's the old thing about how fast do you have to be to outrun the bear? Right? Faster than the guy with you. Right? You just have to be able to move faster. The contrast is, what kind of shepherd? You need to be, you will have either the good shepherd or you will have self-oriented shepherds. That's all you have. And the only good shepherd is Christ. He is willing to lay down his life for the sheep. He is not a self-serving individual. He is not one who is willing to run at the drop of a hat. He will stay and give his life. I am the good shepherd. I know my own, and my own know me, even as the Father knows me, and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. I'm willing to give my life. Instead of using the sheep to enhance my life, I am willing to give my life for them. What a contrast. Jesus, and I have other sheep who are not from this fold. And that includes most of us here, right? Unless you're Jewish. If you're a Jewish Christian, you still fit in the first group, but there are other sheep, the Gentile sheep, who are not from this fold. I must bring them also, and they will hear my voice, and they will become one flock with one shepherd. Now look at verse 17. When people talk about unconditional love, remember this verse. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life so that I may take it up again. See, that's conditional. In one sense, right? The Father loves Jesus because of what Jesus does. That's a conditional love. Now, does the Father love Jesus in an unconditional love? Yes. But there are also times when Jesus expresses it as a conditional love. So he says, I am going to lay down my life. And here's that hint that they didn't get, but you and I get it because we've read the rest of the story, which they did not have, right? So that I may take it up again. That hint of the resurrection. And then, lest we misunderstand, verse 18, no one takes it away from me, but from myself I lay it down. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This commandment I received from my Father. So I would argue that this passage echoes very clearly Ezekiel 34. And I think Jesus does that deliberately, because as he's in conflict with the Jewish leaders in Jerusalem and elsewhere, he is saying to them, you're Ezekiel 34, verses 1 through 10. I and verses 11 through 24. Okay? I am the good shepherd, you are not. And again, that creates conflict, and it makes the leaders mad. In fact, look at verses 19 and 20. And the division occurred again among the Jews because of these words. And many of them were saying, he has a demon and is insane. Why do you listen to him? And others were saying, these are not the words of someone demon-possessed. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind? Right? So I think there were some who said, wow, that sounds like Ezekiel. And I think Jesus deliberately does that for his people. Now, real quickly, if we can, let's drop down back to Ezekiel 34 and verse 25. And here, we have time. Can you back up to Leviticus? Leviticus chapter 26. And verses 3 through 13. Whoops. So, God says to Israel in Leviticus 26, verses 3 through 13, he says this, if you walk in my statutes and keep my commandment so as to do them. Now, again, this is not an empty promise, but Israel cannot do this by themselves, right? It is only because of the fulfillment of the new covenant that God enables them to obey, right? So God not only gives the command, he not only tells them the blessings that will come if there's obedience, he also makes them able to obey. And then he blesses them because he's already graced them in order to make them to obey. Does that make sense? But listen to what he has promised. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments so as to do them, then I shall give you rains in their season so that the land will give forth its produce and the trees of the field will give forth their fruit. Indeed, your threshing will last for you until grape gathering, and grape gathering will last until sowing time. You will eat your food to the full and live securely in the land. And I shall also give you peace in the land so that you may lie down with no one making you tremble. I shall also eliminate wild beasts from the land, and no sword will pass through your land, but you will pursue your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword, and 5 of you will pursue 100, 100 of you will pursue 10,000, and your enemies will fall before you by the sword. So I will turn toward you and make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will confirm my covenant with you, and you will eat the old supply and clear out the old because of the new. In other words, you're going to have to throw away the old food because you have so much new food, right? And you're not even born in the Great Depression. So you know what I mean, right? God has provided, will provide so much. Moreover, I will make my dwelling among you, and my soul will not loathe you. I will also walk among you and be your God, and you shall be my people. I am Yahweh your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt so that you will not be their slaves, and I broke the bars of your yoke and made you walk erect. Now, remember those now as we go back to Ezekiel 34 and listen to these promises. Now, I want you to notice also, he's going to give us, first of all, you can see this on your outline, but peace with animals in verse 25, but also again in verse 28. And then he will give peace with creation in verse 26 and peace with creation in verse 29. And then it's going to be peace with your oppressors in verse 27. And so what you're expecting is what? Peace with oppressors in verses 30 and 31. And yet, he changes, right? And that's very typical within a Jewish style of writing. He gets you listening to that repetition, and then he throws in that third time, it just, whoa, that doesn't fit. And it makes you remember. That's his way of emphasizing. So listen to this covenant of peace. And he says in verse 25, I will cut a covenant of peace with them. And that's just a very literal translation. Instead of making a covenant, you would cut a covenant, because in the covenant making process, an animal needed to be cut in pieces. Okay? And so, as remember, when God makes his covenant with Abraham, and God puts spreads the pieces apart, and Abraham can walk through the middle of them, right? The whole point is, if you don't fulfill the covenant, may you become like these pieces of an animal. May you be destroyed, right? So to cut a covenant is that expression. I will cut a covenant with them and cause harmful beasts to cease from the land, so that they may live securely in the wilderness and sleep in the woods. Well, that sounds like Leviticus. Secondly, verse 26, he says, not only will you have peace with animals, you will have peace with creation. And I will make them in the places all around my hill a blessing, and I will cause showers to come down in their seasons, and they will be showers of blessing. And then you can sing the song in your head as you listen to the rest of that. But the point is, animals, creation, and then verse 27, and the tree of the field will yield its fruit, and the earth will yield its produce, and they will be secure in the land. Okay, that's all part of this with creation. Then they will know that I am Yahweh when I have broken the bars of their yoke and have delivered them from the hand of those who have enslaved them. That sounds like Leviticus 26. But you are now going to have peace and freedom with the animals, with creation, and with oppressors. Then he restarts the cycle in verse 28. They will no longer be plunder to the nations, and the beasts of the earth will not devour them, but they will live securely, and no one will make them tremble. Verse 29, and I will establish for them a renowned planting place, and they will not again be victims of famine in the land, and they will not bear the dishonor of the nations anymore. And so, when you come to verses 30 and 31, you're anticipating freedom from oppressors, only to find, then they will know that I, Yahweh, their God, am with them, and that they, the house of Israel, are my people, declares Adonai Yahweh. As for you, my sheep, the sheep of my pasture, you are men, and I am your God, declares Adonai Yahweh. What a tremendous promise, right? And Leviticus 26 echoes throughout this whole thing. Now, how can these promises be fulfilled? How can this covenant of peace be fulfilled? Because God has to bring a total transformation to the hearts of the people of Israel, right? And that is what happens with the giving of the new covenant. And the new covenant is made with the two houses of the nation of Israel, with the north and the southern tribes, 10 to the north, 2 to the south. But they will be so transformed that they will never again disobey. Okay? Wow. So God says, here's the standard. If you want blessing, you need to do this, but you can't do that. So then I will do it for you. I will so change you, I will so transform you, that you will be enabled by my grace to be obedient to the commands. And then, because God is such a tremendously gracious and giving God, then I'm going to bless you because you've obeyed. Because I've enabled you to obey. But I still want to bless you. And he does. What a tremendously gracious God. Indeed, the good shepherd. Right? So, we've covered a lot here this evening, but I hope that chapter 34 echoes long in your memory, thinking of especially of John 10, and I gave you a list of other references there as well about Jesus shepherding, but what an encouraging, refreshing, challenging portion of Scripture for the people of Israel, but also for us, right? To be reminded of this good shepherd that has come and laid down his life for the sheep. We didn't ask him to come, right? We didn't get on God's website and ask him to contact us when he had time, right? That never happened. In the fullness of time, God sent forth his son. Not because we had been such nice people, not because we had been demanding, right? In fact, we didn't want him to come, right? But he came at just the right time, in just the right way, and laid down his life for us and took it up again, exercising the authority that God the Father had given to him so that he could stand before us one day as prophet, priest, and king. But by doing those three things, being the good shepherd. So I trust it's a helpful portion for you, and it'll stick with you. Next time, next week is open forum, right? Yeah, so 2 weeks, we'll pick up with chapter 35. We'll go quickly through Edom's destruction. And there's a reason for that, but they earned what's going to come to them. And then in chapter 36, then we will get to, so we'll try to cover in 2 weeks, we'll try to cover 35 and get as far as we can in chapter 36. All right, any questions or comments? All right, before cupcakes? No.
I mean, they're basically unbelievers.
Right.
After this, they finally become, the Spirit goes into them somehow. And what God does, he gives them the ability
to
respond to them.
And that will take place in the future restoration, right, at the end of the tribulation, and in preparation for the millennial kingdom. Yeah. Yeah, I think they will. I think that's what we'll see in Ezekiel and also in Jeremiah. It is perfect obedience, which I would argue is, well, we'll get to this in a couple of weeks, but I would argue this is why I don't think the new covenant is completely fulfilled in the church. Because if it was, if the new covenant is going to be fulfilled literally, and it will, then how does our disobedience fit in with a literal reading of the new covenant? And I don't think it does. I think it splashes over onto us. I think we get many blessings of it. And we celebrate it, right? Jesus says, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, right? And when we read for the Lord's Supper. But it is not fully poured out upon us as it will be with Israel. So Israel's obedience will be perfect for those who are redeemed at the end of the tribulation period and enter into the kingdom. Those who come alive into the kingdom will have a perfect obedience, just as we will be in perfect obedience. Right. Humany, yes, yeah. That's a theological term. Yeah. Right. So the ones who will be disobedient during the kingdom will be those born into the kingdom who are not born again. They come in still with a fallen nature, which will make them stick out so vividly because everybody else is obeying, right? Even Israel. I mean, we've grown accustomed as we've gone through the majority of the Old Testament now. We have, Israel is always disobeying, always. And yet there's coming a time when they will obey. It's like, you know, in a sense, I'll believe it when I see it. We will see it. But I believe it because God has revealed it to be so, even if we can't see it right now. But it will happen. So, yeah, or worse.
Yeah. But that's because you know who they're going to be.
Right. Yeah, and Romans 11 is still true. Right? And so we wait for the fulfillment of Romans 9, 10, and 11 and the restoration of Israel in genuine faith and in perfect obedience. So we long for that. But Israel, even though they are what they are today, they are still God's beloved nation. They are still his people. Doesn't mean we support everything that they do. At the same time, and he didn't either. And he knows them far better than we do. They will be redeemed. They will be transformed so that they never again seek another false god of any kind. I mean, they've been worshiping false gods forever, seems like, right? And for God to say, you're no longer going to do that, it's like, yeah. I mean, that is the fullness of that transformation. You and I get saved and we have great aspirations, right? And we think, I'm going to obey God all day today, right? And then we get out of bed. And then it's like, right? We struggle even before we get out of bed sometimes. But the new covenant, the fulfillment of the new covenant will be perfect obedience. So, and one day we'll experience that. But it ain't right now. So, yeah. But what we just sell short the new covenant. I think we trim it here and there to make us feel more comfortable, rather than just letting it stand in its starkness of what it says. They will be obedient, and either that's what it means or it doesn't, but I think it means what it says. So let's not call it, let's not trim it, let's not edit it, let's just leave it for what it says.